Alright, welcome to episode 26 of the Radio Any Podcast for nerdappropriate.com.
It's a lovely Saturday.
It is a Saturday evening, afternoon. It's like 7.
Slightly, partially cloudy with a severe
chance of rain.
It's about to pour.
We are
not live casting.
We're not.
Just three of us in a room.
The old days.
Yeah.
Yeah. We dropped the, Ryan and Amy off at the pool or something.
Yes.
Came back and did a podcast.
Remember when we did the original ones in your den?
Yeah. When it was just very dark.
Huddled around the table. Uh-huh.
This den is a little brighter than your den.
It is. Yeah, my den's brighter. In a cave.
We could have been doing
I have two lights, too, but they're just not bright. Well, one's like I have like a little, I guess it's a bulb that resembles a torch, so it flickers.
Okay. So it really is like a stick nail.
It really
nail.
Is like a candy, yeah. And then the other one looks like a lantern.
I always thought, there's that old Steak and Ale building, like, up the street. I always thought it'd be cool to, like, do something with that building since it already looks like a castle.
D&D.
Yeah. Just, like, buy the building and turn it into, like, a game
My friend was
shop.
Telling me, my friend up in Brooklyn said there's a, in Brooklyn they have, what's it called? It's called, like, the Nerd something. And it's just a place where people play games. And it's like D&D and board games and card games and everything. Like, and they just have stuff that people
just
come
a lair.
Yeah, people like come hang out and play D&D, run awesome. Some D&D sessions.
How do they pay for the space? Just
I imagine they probably sell beverages and snacks and things of that sort.
Have a liquor license, would you? Drunken.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea if you could get it, because beer licenses are cheap. You could get like beer and wine and then just do like shit snacks and soda and stuff. I feel like that would probably make a decent amount of money here.
But on topic, remember when we had debates? Now that this is 26 and not 25,
yeah.
Remember when we had debates over geek versus nerd and what we would call this?
And how
often we bounced back and forth between what the actual name would be?
Well, it's funny because like when I do the interviews and stuff, I say, hey, you know, like what one nerdy thing are you kind of don't really like to talk about, but it's something that you do as a hobby or a collection, and everybody has something nerdy about themselves.
Mm.
So that's why I'm kind of glad that we ended up becoming Nerd Appropriate, because even if it's like, I'm a professional rockette, or I'm a fucking this, I'm a that, everybody has something that they're almost ashamed of, but it's something they're actually passionate about. So that's why I love the word nerd. So
I always thought, to me, like, geek had more of a derogatory slang to it, you know?
Yeah, we had that discussion that we thought geek was more negative.
But then I saw, what was it, Ice Cube? Who's married to Coco? Ice-T. Ice-T was
who
on...
Who railed on nerds.
Yeah, Ice-T was on Jimmy Fallon. He's like, I'm a geek, I ain't no nerd. And I was like, really, dude? Like, how do you differentiate? Because I think...
Also Ice-T.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
But he plays COD Blob, so...
Which makes him not a geek.
Yeah.
Me. Like, if you say, like, no, I'm a total gamer geek, and they're like, what do you play? Like, Call of Duty? I'm like, you're not a gamer geek. You play a shooter
that
14 million other people are playing at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess...
He's a pretty hardcore gamer, though.
Yeah.
He plays mainly shooters.
But I'm sure he's not playing, like, Final Fantasy X.
No, probably not. He's probably not an RPG guy. I don't really see that. So 26. Let's go to the old-fashioned, what the hell you guys been up to this week?
What are you playing?
New Vegas, man. I've been playing a ton of New Vegas. I've been playing, I've got a talker. I've got a guy who can talk in New Vegas. He can shoot guns, and he can pick locks, and he can throw explosives. Those are all, like, 50 level, but he's an 80 in skill tree talkers, which means I only have 20 points, I think, left to put in it. Whatsoever.
I love doing
to max out. But,
didn't you make a ninja character in Fallout 3?
In Fallout 3, yeah.
How did that work out?
Not well.
You're trying to go all...
Was basically like, pick up a gun of some sort and don't do anything else. Because 3 wasn't really balanced to talk or to... Like, they didn't have, like... What I've noticed in New Vegas is that they've had specific challenges. Like, when you talk to somebody and they're like, hey, I need you to go do this thing. Go kill this guy or take care of the situation for me. And you're like, okay. They'll be... Like, once you say okay, you get to ask, like, I want to ask a question about that mission. And they go like, okay. And then they'll have 3 questions that you can ask, and the 3 questions generally pair towards specific skills. It'll be like, I just want to go shoot the fucker. And they're like, oh, okay, then you need to go up this route, and you'll find him over on the east side.
Oh.
Or it'll be like, you know, well, I'd really like to be diplomatic in this case. And it's like, well, if you're thinking about being diplomatic, you should talk to this other guy and see what you can, you know. And you're like, no, I'd just rather sneak in and get it done. And they're like, oh, okay, well, if you go around the back of the building...
That's something you wouldn't have gotten without the talking...
Well, what I'm saying is, like, the missions now are varied enough that you can do them multiple ways without having to pull a gun on somebody.
I think the dialogue based on certain skills was in Fallout 3, but it had no bearing on, like, how you approach
certain missions.
Right,
no, that's what I'm saying. Like, the mission... That's awesome. Fallout 3 was very... It was open world, but very linear when you went to do the mission itself. Mm-hmm, there was really only one way to get through it. And this one, like, we were just talking, there's a mission about halfway through the game where you actually get into New Vegas. And Derek did it a completely different way than he did it, who I think did it a different way than I did it. Like, there's three different ways that we all went different and got it done differently.
It's pretty awesome. So, you think you're about halfway through, how many hours have you logged on your
save? I'm really horrible at guesstimating that.
Usually the saves will mark your hour.
Yeah, but I always feel like I'm like, I've done like 20 hours, and I look, I'm like, 4.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, I mean, I'm on... You can't judge it on how many saves, because the game's really buggy, so you're saving constantly.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm level 16. I played like 4 hours today, I've probably put about 15, 20 hours
into
the
cool.
game.
That's cool. Yeah. That sounds about right. So, bugs aside,
it's a good game.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Hole in my lip.
Oh, sorry.
bugs aside, I mean, the game's fun. And the bugs aren't horrible. The bugs are just annoying. I mean, they're not... The bugs aren't game-breaking. They're just annoying enough that, like, you'll finish something and then it bugs out and you have to redo the thing you just finished because it bugged out before you could get out of what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of obnoxious. But otherwise, it's cool. Like, the weapons and the armor feel good. Like, the varied amount of stuff that you can get. And the story's good. I'm enjoying it. It's been a really fun game.
I was kind of on the fence about it, so maybe I'll try to... It's always, like, on the radar. Like, if I hear more good things than bad, I'll probably play it.
It's definitely... It's worth playing. It's a really solid story. It really is.
Cool.
And they added... The companions they added are really good, too.
Yeah. Felicia Day...
Who is she? I still haven't even...
She's how you get into the Brotherhood of Steel.
Okay.
So she's... you find her, she's just in a camp along the side of the road.
Mm.
And she joins without you having to do anything. She's just like, I want to go with you. And you're like, all right.
Cool.
Come with me.
What are you playing right now? Or watching or reading?
I haven't really played games this week because work's been insane, but... I finished All Your Base Are Belong to Us, the Harold Goldberg History of Video Games book.
Oh, cool.
And really good. And I'll do like a full review on the site and stuff this week. But it's a really amazing game about, or game, it's an amazing book about the dawn of the video game industry, all the way back from Pong through like the creation of Mario.
Is it written just as a historical perspective, or is it focused on a specific like aspect of...
It's pretty much all of it. It tells like how these creators came up with their ideas and also all the trials and tribulations of the business itself. Like, you know, all about how many units have to ship in order to make a profit and all the crazy behind the scenes stories. So it's almost written from the perspective of like an investigative reporter. Like he went back and interviewed all these old guys that like started like Coleco and all these crazy companies and, you know,
that's
the creators
awesome.
Of Myst and, like, basically the dawn of the modern RPG. And so, like, if you have any interest in, like, the history of gaming or how the business is really working, it's, like, priceless information. Like,
highly recommended.
Yeah, totally.
That's cool.
I mean, it can be, like, it's it's not, like, fun to read.
Oh.
It's, like, it's more like a periodical.
Okay.
But
yeah.
it's still really awesome, and
that's cool.
Really enjoyed it.
I know you say you had a busy week. Do you have time to play anything?
I
see a movie.
Played
perhaps?
A little bit of I played a little bit of. We got Mortal Kombat, but I haven't played it yet.
Yeah.
I played
more L.A. Noire or no?
Tiny bit of L.A. Noire. I haven't really gotten a chance to because I would get home from work and be too tired to really focus. So.
That's not something that you can just pick up and play 5 minutes of. You really need to try to do a whole case at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't really play much this week. Movies? Let's see. I can't remember the name of it now, but I watched some Joel Schumacher movie about zombie Nazis.
Well, the...
It's on it.
Keep talking. It'll come to me.
And, like, I love the intro to it, and then it just got, like, worse and worse. It has Dominique Purcell from Prison Break, mm-hmm. and it has Henry Cavill, who's going to be the new Superman.
Yeah, I know what this movie is.
Yeah, I can't remember the name
of it. You'll blurt it out, like, right in the middle of the podcast.
Yeah, it has a very generic name. But I'm like, Schumacher in the old days was, like, one of the kick-ass directors. And right. then he put out Batman Forever, and his career was, like, obliterated. So I'm like, holy hell, here's a Joel Schumacher movie with all these great names, and it's about Nazi zombies. I'm like, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
So it was on Netflix Insta Watch. I watched it, and it was lackluster,
yeah.
to say the least.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
but,
funny.
It was like, I'll think of the name, or Matt will think of the name of
it. Is it Blood Creek?
No, it's not Blood Creek.
No, that's not it. Is it? It's Joel Schumacher?
Yeah.
I've not seen it. Maybe it's a different movie than what I'm thinking of.
I started reading, based on our earlier podcast where you guys talked about, I think it was from PAX, I started reading Jane McGonigal's book.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was at PAX.
Reality is Broken, and I hate to say, I went in with the attitude of being very skeptical. Because, you know, it's one of those books where it's like, and I don't know if this is just a product of marketing, but, like, I feel like all books nowadays are, like one or two word phrase, colon, explanation of book title, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like...
You railed on that for a little while.
Yeah, it's like, reality is broken. And then, like, you're like,
yeah,
I don't know
Creek.
What that means.
Is it called?
Yeah.
So the title
That's
will
a different
be,
one,
the title will be, like, you know, pooped in your pants. And you're like, what is that about? And it's like, oh, it's about the economy. Like,
yeah.
So it's like, instead of putting what comes after the colon, I don't know, I have a weird outlook on these, like, scientific kind of books.
You're too far in, man.
Yeah, I'm too entrenched in it, but, I was still skeptical because I feel like there are a lot of people who would like to write books like this, and probably have, and so I guess my question was, why does her book get more attention than, like, other people that are in digital media or related fields and interested in writing about games, positive psychology, all that stuff. But from what I've read...
Doesn't she come out with a pretty thick background? From
yes.
That? I mean, I think that's why she...
So, yeah, so I guess the thing that is set out, like, immediately is sort of, like, the breadth of knowledge that she investigates, like, in doing this. I'm
right.
Like, oh, okay, that's cool. So, like, I'm on board now, and, like, I'm actually enjoying reading it, so when I get through it, we can talk about it a little more. But,
cool. The one other thing I forgot, that I watched this last night, and it's actually, I think, my first time sitting down and watching it front to back, and I think it's a movie you really like, which is Escape from New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
First time I've ever watched it all the
yeah.
way through. It's a freaking great movie, man.
Movie.
It is really good.
It's on watch.
You will love it.
Cool.
You will absolutely love
character.
It.
He really is.
Where did his voice come from, man? That is like,
know.
Kurt Russell's voice disappeared after that movie from how he talked. He's like, it's
yeah.
a really high-pitched, like, smoker voice.
Yeah. yeah, that was
I'm here
movie.
To save the president.
That's good stuff.
That movie is fantastic.
That sounds like
it?
The plot to Bad Dudes.
I blogged it really quick last night because I'd heard the guys on the Totally Rad Show talked about this, about how he did the cities, those laser cities.
Yeah.
So, part of the movie, Snake Plissken's like in this glider, and he's going into the city, and as he's going in, it's this big view of New York, but it's all done in what looks like laser. It looks like CG. Like, nowadays you'd look at it and be like, oh, did somebody fart that out in 3 seconds,
you know,
on a computer?
Post something about
yeah,
that? Or late? Okay, yeah.
They built a model of New York City, put glow-in-the-dark tape around it, lit a black light on it, and then shot it going in. So it's actually
looked,
real.
So like a wireframe city?
Because that was cheaper than doing it in CGI in 86
wow.
or whenever the movie was.
That's
crazy.
Totally respectable.
Yeah,
all
so,
that stuff.
And then when I posted that, a good friend of Scott and I's, Travis Duenas, wrote me back and said that for the opening of, what was it, The Thing? Where it's like the backlit letters with the smoke and all that stuff. It's like this crazy process of how he got that to work the way he got it to work. And I'm going to look it up really quick, and if Scott wants to cut this out or talk.
Not to go off on too much of a tangent, but like I feel like stuff like that is what makes movies, like older movies, great. Like movies like Star Wars, like the effects were cheesy, but like just the fact that they were made by hand and it
oh, yeah.
worked. Like, do you ever think we'll see somebody do
raw
that
creativity.
Not because they don't have access to like the computer technology, but just because they were like, I thought it'd be cool to shoot a movie where all the effects were real.
Yeah.
You know?
There's some directors
funny enough, Michael Bay is one who prefers to do
practical
a lot of times. For his big, like, huge scale stuff, he'll
it
actually do
better.
Big,
I mean,
huge
like,
scale stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, a car crash looks a lot better if it's an actual fucking car crashing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm sorry, but, like, bullet hits and squibs and stuff, when they're CG, I can't stand them compared to, like, a real old-fashioned squib or bullet hit. It's like, it looks so different. You can just tell.
So, Travis wrote me and said, have you ever watched the thing with commentary when he explained how they did the opening title? And then he quoted, it says, when I did the effect for the title, I used a fish tank that was about 4 feet wide and 2 feet high. I put smoke in the fish tank, and on the back of the tank, I put the title that was drawn on the on an animation cell. So it's a clear cell on the back of a fish tank. Behind that, I had a piece of plastic garbage bag, which I stretched over a frame. And behind that, I had a light pointing through the letters. When I photographed it, I put a flame on a match to the plastic. The plastic would open up and melt and let the light through the letters as the letters looked like they were burning through in light rays.
That's crazy.
I think that reminds me of... I watched a special feature once on how they did Independence Day. And you know, like, when the laser beam shoots down into the White House and it explodes outward?
Yeah.
They shot that, like, underwater. And it's really just, like, sand, like, coming out. Like, they just basically, like, blew up the sand and the sand comes out and like, kind of does a plume, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how they made that effect for the explosion of, like, the White House or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
But that stuff is awesome, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's awesome when they can blend them together.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Star Wars Episode 1 is a perfect example of, like, abusive CG, what that can do. Like, saying, you know, we'll just use digital sets and use very little on location, and you just look at it, and it's sterile.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have that depth that...
But then you look at Avatar... You know, I mean, I feel like there's different levels.
Like, where's the disconnect, you know?
Yeah, because Avatar I watched and didn't feel sterile at all. Felt like the world was completely alive, and that was 100%.
But that's
digital.
Just because Cameron's, like, a fucking maniac.
Yeah, I mean,
he probably, like, when he had his artist go in, like, pixel by pixels, like, make that better.
Yeah,
I'm sure he did.
And then he smacked them if they did
that. I'm sure he did, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and interestingly enough, the next big 3D budget movie is Michael Bay's Transformers 3.
Yeah.
That's the next one done with James Cameron's cameras.
Is it going to be in 3D, that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so sad. I feel like I kind of need to see it, but...
I'm going to go see it.
I'll only see them if they're shot with a 3D camera.
They're shot with... Yeah, he said...
Like, I don't...
They just did... It was crazy. They did, I think, again, one of the podcasts I watched, but Totally Rad Show did a coverage of... They did an event in L.A. where James Cameron and Michael Bay sat down... previewed footage of Transformers 3, and then just talked about 3D in the industry of film.
Wow.
So these two...
I'm surprised those two guys get along. They're both so alpha.
Yeah.
And Cameron's sort of like... I don't know. He's like a cool dad kind of guy.
Yeah.
Like a cool dad you don't want to fuck with. And Michael Bay is like a pissed off frat boy. So
yeah.
I don't see them like really meshing.
It was interesting to see them talking, but what Michael Bay talked about with the 3D and what the guys from Total Rad Show said was cool... was to see Bay actually, like, kind of geeking out, nerding out about 3D with Cameron. Like, he wasn't, like, cool frat guy. He was just going, like, oh, yeah, we shot it this way, and we did this and this and this, and we did all this stuff. But I guess what he said was he didn't go as strict as Cameron with Avatar. He didn't shoot literally everything with the 3D cameras.
Yeah.
He did go back and do 3D a couple of times, like, post. But he said the times he did it in post were times that he felt like trying to shoot it in 3D limited how he could shoot the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he decided, well, we'll go back, we'll do it in post. But the difference being, he said, he didn't treat this like an add-on for dollars. He was like, when we went and did it in post, I hand-selected the studio that did it for us. I sat in the studio and watched them while they were doing it to be like, okay, no, that needs to be pulled this way. I still directed the 3D that happened.
He still had the vision.
Because what's usually happening with Pirates and, you know, Clash of the Titans and stuff is they just give the movie to 2-3 studios. They say, cut these elements apart, shift them so that it has the depth that it's supposed to have, and then that's why it looks like shit half the time. So.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, I'll go see Transformers 3. I mean, I didn't see 2 in the theater, but I'll see 3 if it's in 3D and it's done well and with the right camera tech. You know?
They're definitely popcorn films. There are moments where I'm like, super cool, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in 2, there's the stealth plane that was like the old crotchety. You ever see 2?
The Transformers?
Yeah.
I think I did, yeah.
The stealth Transformer, he was awesome.
I just don't want them to continue to destroy my childhood.
Well, they're going to. Because they're making way too much money to sell.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a scene in this one that I did see a clip of, which I think is on YouTube now if you go look it up, but Bay actually hired the guys in, like, the flying suits, the gliding suits.
Oh, really?
He hired 10 of them to go through Chicago in the suits, and they have cameras and stuff, and they actually did 3D from their camera, too.
Wow.
They did, like, the little mini 3D cameras. And he said it took something like a year to get the clearance to do the scene, because it's all real, and they literally drop out of a plane. They literally drop out of a plane above the city of Chicago and then fly through the buildings of Chicago, like, on their little squirrel suit things, gliding suits.
Maybe I'll just have to see this movie and not recognize the fact that those are Transformers.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it.
I mean, I feel like if Bay had done the G.I. Joe movie, you know, I would have been like, well, you know, at least it was a good action movie. Michael,
you cannot argue that his action sequences are fucking ridiculous. Right. Yeah, they're phenomenal. Like, you know, like, there's so much bass and just, like, crazy shit going on. It's just like you're in the middle of a war zone, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean,
content-wise.
Yeah, and that's where the criticism comes from. Yeah. It's like, hey, was there a story? It was like, no, we just blew the desert up. And
yeah, that's all right.
Something about a pyramid? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Racist Autobots, that's crazy.
Yeah,
I hate those guys.
All right, so...
So the reason we're doing this on a Saturday, again... This time is you guys went to the Spooky Mayhem convention.
Spooky Mayhem!
Tell us about it.
All right, well, Spooky Empires puts on a convention in October called Spooky Empires Convention, and it's sort of an offshoot of the Fangoria Weekend of Horrors. What they decided to do a few years back was kind of not use the Fangoria license, but try and pull in the same names that Fangoria did and have a smaller sort of... family-centric horror convention, which is sort of a contradiction, but...
Yeah.
Horror convention that everybody can come to and meet some of their favorite actors from science fiction and horror movies. And it did so well in October, and there was such a big turnout, that they decided that rather than wait all the way till October again, they were going to quickly pull together a spin-off of their own convention, put it at the end of May, call it Mayhem, and then kind of see what happens. So... You didn't go to Spooky Empires in October. Just your general, Scott and I went, your general perception of what Mayhem was like.
There is definitely something to be said for the small convention.
Sure.
Like, cause this had a much, like, warmer feel. Like, the rooms are not very big. But I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, I kinda said that, like, just to be able to see, like, a subculture of people, even if it's not, like, the thing. Like, I don't really know a lot about horror movies, you know, but I still enjoyed being, like, in a culture of people that were all there for the same reason. And, like, as small as the convention was, a lot of people still dressed up, like, full costumes, like, wore, like, crazy clothes, like, did face paint to look like zombies and stuff.
And then, ironically, on my way home from dropping off the mic to you guys... I had to get gas. I stopped at 7-Eleven to get gas, and this person pulled in front of me, and a zombie got out and gassed her car up.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know where you're going right now.
And what is interesting is that, like, the place where the convention was held is so unassuming. Like, you would have no idea that there was something going on there.
Well, it's just a hotel, right?
Yeah, pretty much just a hotel, like, on the street. It's not, like, giant signs, like, convention center style. It's really just pretty low-key, but I think that actually makes it fun, because... You know, like, I guess, like, most of the cast from The Walking Dead were there, and it's like, if you watch that show and you were stoked on it, you could just walk right up and spend, like, more than 2 seconds with these people.
Did Kirkman go or no?
Kirkman wasn't there. No. Okay. Kirkman wasn't there.
There's, like, I think Phoenix Comic-Con's going on at the same time.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I think it was just, I mean, I thought it was really cool, even, like, not as a fan of horror movies, like, I still enjoyed it, like, thoroughly.
Yeah, it's definitely cool just to see all the costumes. Like, there was a girl dressed up as Ash from Evil Dead, and I had never seen a girl Ash before.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, and there's just, like, all sorts of strange, off-the-wall people in costumes. And, like, when Scott and I first walked up, I was like, yeah, it's going to be weird. It's, like, almost like this biker subculture, like, everyone's, like, kind of a little bit gothic, a little bit different, but everyone, you know, there was super, super friendly, and I didn't see, like, a lot of these larger conventions, you'll get a lot of attitudes and a lot of people that are pissed because they're such a confined space, and, you know, you're competing for different things.
Yeah.
There was, like, really none of that there.
Probably as many volunteers as, like, maybe, like, what I saw at MegaCon, too, in a smaller space. So it was, like, much more managed in the sense that, like, there were people everywhere, like, if something was going on, like, everyone still had a person at the autograph table with them, like...
Right.
It, I mean, I thought it was very, very well run, even for, like, a small thing.
Yeah, I agree, too.
Did they do it in the same size room they did the October one in?
Or mm-hmm. was it the same place? Rooms and everything, yeah. The number of people attending, like guests, same number as October, just a different lineup. So October had, like, Robert Englund.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, some other people, and this one had Bruce Campbell. And some other big names. But I went ahead and divided it by different categories.
Okay.
That way we can kind of streamline our little review here. But the first thing was merch, and I wanted to point out that Scott bought something today. And Scott, we talked about on the podcast a lot, but for those that are tuning in for the first time, Scott collects Admiral Akbar memorabilia.
Exclusively.
Yes. Yeah. That's all he really collects. That and some Mass Effect stuff.
Yeah, but as far as Star Wars is
concerned. Yeah, your Mass Effect collection is starting to grow there.
Oh, right? It's pretty substantial.
Which I'm jealous of.
Yeah.
I'm totally jealous of it.
But I mean, like, as far as Star Wars goes, I used to have a problem with collecting everything Star Wars, and I really kind of just scaled it back to only Admiral Akbar, and that has worked out tremendously.
Yeah, so we found an Admiral Akbar... I guess it's a sketch, painting,
yeah.
Piece of art.
I guess, thankfully, like, no matter what convention you go to, like, Star Wars merch is always welcome.
It's weird because I now find myself, whenever I'm anywhere that has, like, nerd memorabilia kind of stuff, because I don't really collect too much. I mean, I have, like, Simpsons stuff probably is my biggest collection.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't really collect too much stuff, and, like, whenever I'm anywhere now, I'm always like, oh, is there any Mon Calamari or Admiral Akbar?
Yeah.
And, like, I'm always looking for your stuff somehow, because it seems like such an easy, finite yeah. question to ask, you know?
And it's really easy to walk through someone's booth, like, in about 5 seconds
yeah.
and go, like, okay, I know you don't have
yeah.
anything, but, like, no matter where you are, like, there's always going to be someone selling Star Wars figures alongside of, like, you know, Evil Dead, like, action figures and stuff, but... the guys that we met actually were at Celebration. Like, I think there were 2 or 3 artists that were there.
Yeah.
And they said that for some reason they couldn't sell Star Wars stuff at Celebration.
Yeah, you needed to have, like, you needed to buy a license.
You had to have a license for
which
artists.
Sure, it's not cheap.
Right. Yeah. So, like, at this particular convention, they did put all their Star Wars stuff out. So the guy is called, I guess his company was Poop Bird. He has a site, poopbird.com. His name is Mike Groves. He did a piece of art where it's basically a shot of a nude... It's just a sketch of a nude woman from, like, the chest to, like, maybe the top of the nose. And she's got, like, her hand on her boob, and she's... Her other hand is, like, sticking an Admiral Akbar action figure in her mouth. And I think the joke is supposed to be booby-trap.
Yeah, booby-trap.
Yeah, and he was super stoked that I bought it, and I told him about my love of Akbar. And then at
yeah.
some point, he turns his wrist over... And, like, right on his forearm is a giant, like, Akbar tattoo that says, you know, it's a trap.
And then, yeah.
We freaked out. We were like, whoa,
well,
you know?
Yeah, they had definitely a moment. And he saw my, like, right as we walked up, he saw my tattoo on my arm from Kill Bill and called it out. And he literally was the first person to ever be like, hey, is that a tattoo from Kill Bill? I was like, fuck, how did you even know that? Because it's, like,
yeah.
literally flashed on her sword for, like, 3 seconds, but
I think
he's got some awesome. I'm looking through his artwork right
he's
now.
He's really fucking
I think,
good.
I think,
some awesome
I think
stuff
we made there. Some new friends now. Like,
yeah, yeah. I'll definitely
they
stop
were,
by.
I remember seeing them at MegaCon and Celebration, and now this.
Are they local?
They're from
they?
Athens.
Oh,
yeah,
oh.
From Athens.
Yeah, yeah. The other guys were from Athens, the robot guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the Red Rocket Farm?
Yeah, I'm almost positive.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. But those guys were super cool. All in all, like, I was really... We talked to... and we'll put this up on the site at some point when we get it all digitized.
We shot some video, yeah.
Yeah, we shot
yeah.
some video of these guys and a guy that actually had a degree in zoology. And he decided that he wanted to make a business out of importing rare animals and bugs and mounting them.
Yeah, he had, like...
Yeah, so he had
like bats
giant
and
scorpions
wow.
and bats. And he was just, like, super nice guy... Super nerdy and into his bugs and animals and loved talking about it. And then there was a guy who handcrafts really kind of creepy puppet master looking dolls. And it takes him 2 weeks to make each doll.
Wow.
And he has them from, like, you know, every single horror genre to, like, he even said he does, like, special commissions. Like,
they're, like, almost like little Chucky-sized dolls.
Yeah.
And he, like, meticulously does, like, all of
each
the sculpting
one.
And art and stuff.
Yeah, they're,
like,
wow.
They're over $200 each.
Jeez.
But he has, like, a massive collection. So there's a lot of really... I mean, it's definitely a subculture and a weird genre of people, but...
I will say what was refreshing was that, like, the people that we talked to like that were not, like, flea market vendors that just, like, load up the shit into their van and, like, drive the conventions. Like, when we talked to these people, we're like, is this you? And they're like, yeah, I make this stuff. Like, I do this. And, like, those are the people that you want really want to talk to.
Because that's usually our biggest letdown is when we go and it's just, like, you can tell they just piled all their old Star Wars toys into a bin, and they're like, just buy whatever you want.
Yeah, it's four for five.
Yeah, Ash made the comment that, like, we didn't see a lot of dust on products, you know, which kind of gave us the impression that the people that were there were really, like...
Yeah,
we went to a couple booths that just had toys, and it was, like, it was as clean as a toy store, you know. Mm-hmm. It was very nice and well-maintained. So that's refreshing to see if you go to a lot of conventions that, you know... MegaCon kind of irked me this year because it really just felt like a giant open flea market.
It really did.
It's kind of a dump a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, just not because of... I don't think that's to the fault of the convention, but the people that represent themselves there were, like, just kind of threw
their trash. I mean, there were a few good booths there at MegaCon this year, but it really... You had to find them.
Yeah.
You want to talk about the people?
We'll talk about this. The people. So the people, like I said, there's a huge mix of all sorts. You saw parents with their kids, a lot of people that appeared to be about our age, a lot of, like, I don't want to say gothic type people, but it was definitely, like, everyone matched. Did you notice that? There was not a pastel to be seen.
Not a lot of fans of sunlight.
No.
And that's not a knock at all. But
no, yeah, I'm not a fan of sunlight either.
I think I remarked that this convention should have been held at night.
Yeah.
Like, from, like, 8 to 6 a.m. or something.
That would have been awesome. I totally would have been into that. But the people were all really nice. I mean, there's really not much to say. There were, like, people from, you know, all ages, from little kids to super old folk. And everyone was really into it and really
And even at this size of convention, people still dressed up, and that's the thing.
A lot of costumes.
As far as the attendees go, that's what surprised me the most.
Yeah, definitely a lot of costumes. Media guests. The first guy we talked to was Tom Sullivan, who was... he did all the special effects for the Evil Dead movies, and he brought his museum with him and had all these artifacts.
Does he still work? Does he still do it?
Yeah, he still does stuff. But right now he just goes to conventions and, like, sells reproductions of his art and things like that. And
they had a small... It was cool. There was, like, a very small room set up with people selling, like, displaying props and selling, like, reproductions of
them. Well, it's just funny that we were just talking about traditional, you know, special effects.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he still does stuff, and he had all, like, he had, like, the Necronomicon.
Wow.
And, like, the dagger that was used at the end of Evil Dead 2 to stab the book, and, like, he had, like, you know, Ash's hand that he cuts off, and the actual chainsaw was, like, in the back of the room from Evil Dead 2. So it was, like, if you're an Evil Dead fan, like, he just had people crowded around
him.
And also, he was a super nice fucking guy. Nice.
Yeah.
And he also gave us, like, he was nice enough to give us, like, the nickel tour of his of his stuff, too, which was really awesome.
Yeah, it was very cool. And then we didn't talk to a whole lot of people, but, you know, there were a lot of people there. Alex Winter was there. I talked to him yesterday, and I'm going to go back and hopefully talk to him tomorrow. Super nice guy. I went up to him and told him my whole story about how I couldn't help myself. I just, like, I saw him, and, like, there weren't any people around him yet, and I ran up, and I was like, when I was a little kid, I rode my bike to the movies, and I saw Bill and Ted, and I didn't know who Napoleon was, and then I started to read about history, and now I'm a history teacher. Thanks, Bill! And he's just like, get the fuck away from me. No, he was actually really cool, but...
Tell us about the guy in front of
me. Oh, there's a guy in front of me right before I walked up, and he was getting some stuff signed, and he wanted Alex Winter to pose with him, and he's like, hey, can you do, you know, the Bill pose with your hand on your chest and one hand in the air, you know, like the excellent pose? And he goes, no, I don't do that anymore. Just, like, totally deadpan, nice, not a dick about it. He's like, no, I don't do that anymore. And then Scott and I were talking. I'm like, just imagine how annoying would that be if you're, like, a guy who has, like, a catchphrase, and everywhere you go, you're like, do your fucking catchphrase, dude.
Yeah.
It's like you're at Publix, and someone's like, excellent.
You're like, I just want a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
How's it going, Royal Ugly Dudes?
So, yeah, he was really cool. We interviewed Deora Baird, who was awesome. And I went and talked to her yesterday.
What is she?
I need to know who she is, because
our listeners know her for, like, maybe the most.
Okay, so Deora Baird, she's been in a ton of horror movies. Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the beginning, Night of the Demons. She's been in Maxim Hot 100 three or four times. She's been in 30 Days of Night, Darkest Days, and then in a bunch of comedies like YPF, and she's in a movie called Hot Tamale.
And she does some. She does some like. She'll do like a one episode of a TV show. Like,
yeah, she does guest spots, and she's on like Two and a Half Men, and she's going to be on Psych soon. But needless to say, incredibly attractive woman. That's what goes without saying. So incredibly attractive, and I was just like, oh, cool, Dior Bear is going to be there. I had known who she was for ever since I saw Texas Chainsaw at the beginning in the theaters, and I was like, oh, who's that girl? She's pretty.
Mm-hmm.
That's the new, the
yeah, that, I think it came out in 06, I think.
Okay.
So, found out she was going to be there and tweeted her a couple weeks ago when I found out she was going to be there. And she tweeted us back at our Nerd Appropriate, at Nerd Appropriate. And I was like, yeah, come say hey. And when I showed up yesterday, she was like, oh, you're the nerd guy. Because she couldn't remember the program. She's like, you're the nerd guy. I was like, yeah, that's me, the nerd guy. And so
yeah, it's me. I'm Ash, the nerd guy.
Yeah, I'm the nerd guy.
She's like, I'm gonna do an interview with the nerd people. And they're just like, good enough, like close enough. Thank you,
nerd something.
Yeah,
but so yeah, we sat her down and asked a bunch of questions about all sorts of stuff, and we'll put it up on the site. But it's always really reassuring. One of my questions was when I met her yesterday. You know, if someone tells you your whole life, because she's been modeling since she was, like, 17, someone tells you your whole life, you're super hot, you're super hot, you're super hot, you figure, like, you would get a little twisted and, you know, like, mm-hmm. you wouldn't be just a nice, normal, easygoing person.
Right.
And one of the questions I asked her, I was like, look, I mean, you've made Maxim Top 100 three or four times, yet you are still a nice person. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of go about doing this? And she sort of has a funny response, but it definitely was refreshing when you meet somebody that you want to meet and they turn out to be cool.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen often enough. A lot of times it'll be kind of a disappointment.
Right.
And what, who are we talking to on the podcast that won't meet people they like? It might have been Ryan.
You said you don't like to? You don't want to meet
not
him.
In general. I'm not like a... I'm not much of like a signature guy anyways, yeah. You know? Like, I did it twice at Comic-Con, and it was because I got a toy. Like, the signature was just kind of like, well, I get an exclusive toy, and the signature comes along with it, you know?
Yeah.
But then both of those groups of people ended up being really awesome. I keep pointing, I realize we're on audio, but it was Seth Green and Matt Seinrich, Rick, and Doc Hammer, and whatever, from Venture Base.
I don't know if you feel the same way I do, but I kind of wish that, like, I don't mind, like, encountering people at the autograph table, but I feel like I'd rather bump into them, like, maybe in the hallway, you know? Like,
Yeah.
Because I feel like it sets up this weird kind of thing where, like, you know, like, you feel like you want to, you have to gush, you have to say something, but, like, because they've been talking to people all day, so you got to come out with something.
See, I kind of feel the opposite, because when I went and saw these guys, they're there to say hi to you and be nice, like, that. Like, not that they, maybe they're being fake, who knows, but... Yeah. But, like, they're there to say, like, hey, what's going on? And sign something and be super nice to you. And then there's... When you just run into people is when they're... Like, they're just there trying to enjoy the con.
Yeah,
they don't really need you to be like, hey, I really love that you do that stuff. And they're like, cool, thank you. You know, I mean, they'll be nice, but, you know, anyways.
It's a tricky proposition, I think.
So we'll have a video interview from her coming up.
Yeah, and I'm going to transcribe it so it'll be video, and then it'll be text also. Some people like to read them.
And
watch them. Cool. So we'll do both. And I think it turned out pretty good. It's about 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's like
long.
10 to 15 minutes long.
Good. Awesome.
Sweet.
Should we do a break real quick?
Would you like a break?
Yeah, I would.
We're not really live.
We're not really live.
Not
so
really a break.
I can just get up and leave. No one will be any the wiser.
Scott just left. I'm going to whisper this. Maybe he won't cut it out.
And we're back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Can I do that?
I would assume you have the power, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, for a quick review, we didn't really play any... We're not
didn't play any Rune of Bet.
Take two.
We didn't really play any new games or anything this week. There weren't really any movies. There's two movies out, which is Hangover 2 and Kung Fu Panda 2. But I haven't seen Hangover 1, nor have I seen Kung Fu Panda 1.
Real quick, did you see that Kung Fu Panda 2's video game is going to be a Kinect game?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
I'm almost interested, just because
of I didn't realize Harmonix is announcing a new game at E3 this year. I didn't know they were that close to ready. They didn't seem like they were fishing for ideas not even 2 months ago.
I think they were kind of pulling our leg at PAX.
Yeah.
Because Ali Thresher did something a few weeks ago. She's like, it's crunch time. And I was like, crunch time?
Yeah.
Like, what are you guys crunching? And like, I didn't hear anything.
They're announcing a brand new title at E3.
I hope it has something to do with Kinect.
It will. I mean, it's Harmonix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, I'll understand, but I really need more Kinect. And,
well, I feel like that's a company that has figured out how to use the Kinect and will probably put out another good title.
Mm-hmm.
The joke was Beatles. What's their dance game? Dance Central?
Beatles Central.
Anyways.
Spend the rest of the podcast trying to wrap my head around that.
So not too much new really happened this week. It was kind of a weird lull in newness. But something new that I've gotten into that is relatively new, I think it's only a few weeks old at this point, is Robert Kirkman of Walking Dead fame has put out a new title called Super Dinosaur.
I'm already on board.
And it is the story of a boy and his dinosaur, this T-Rex that he hangs out with, who his dad built a super suit for that they can go and battle.
He built a super suit for the dinosaur?
For the dinosaur.
That sounds excellent.
So, two issues have come out and an origin story, I think, although most of the... No, this is the origin story. So
how'd you even find this?
I knew Robert Kirkman was putting a new book out.
Oh, okay.
And, like, as shitty as this sounds, one of my hesitations with Walking Dead is that I'm never going to catch up, and it's feasibly never going to end. So,
okay.
I'm kind of like, it kind of makes me not as excited about reading a book when I know that I could sink hundreds of dollars into, like, a series and still never get to the current issue, you know? Like, there's a lot of volumes out right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's going to
never worth it.
Yeah. I'm also a little zombied out at the moment, so I'm kind of letting the zombies build elsewhere.
I mean, there could come a day that, like, this, it does end or something, and, like, all of a sudden you can just pick up, like, a
big compendium. Yeah, maybe then they'll put a big, like, you know, maybe I'll be rolling in dough and they'll put out, like, $400 compendium of all the volumes or something. But anyways, this story is written well. It's a fun kind of take. It's not at all serious. There is no depth to the story or whatever. It's very much so this kid lives in an underground lab with his dad, who's a super scientist. His dad and his ex-partner discovered dinosaurs and raised this T-Rex, essentially, and built this thing so that he can talk. Like, they can talk to the T-Rex.
Oh, okay, cool.
The other scientist, like, split off and is trying to take over the world with his group of dinosaurs that he is creating.
All right.
These dinosaurs. He's actually making them from scratch.
Right, okay.
Because of this rock they found called Dinopia or something like that.
So as far as the protagonists go, just one dinosaur, or he's got
one dinosaur, just the boy and the dinosaur, and so then a bunch of cool toys.
So there's only one real dinosaur, and then a bunch of fake.
Yeah, I think one of the other ones might be real or something.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
So and they battle, and then in the second issue, they just introduced a new antagonist who you don't know what he is yet, but his part of his suit ripped and it looked like dinosaur skin underneath. But he's as big and regular shaped as a human.
I don't read a lot of comic books, but I'm oddly into this.
You know what? It's like, I was talking to the guys at the store when I picked it up, because they're like, oh yeah, Super Dinosaur? And I was like, well, you know, it's fun, it's Kirkman, like, you know, his writing's decent enough and the art's fun. And he was like, you know, he's like, I'm reading it too. He goes, you want to know why? I'm like, why? He goes, this is 90s Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, and even from looking at the cover, that's what I'm
saying. It totally is. This is like straight out of me being 12 years old watching a cartoon
exactly
on Saturday morning, and this is what I would have turned on and watched, Super Dinosaur. And it reads like that. The action is like that. It's drawn pretty well, but it's a fun little book. So I just wanted to bring it up to kind of encourage everybody. If you missed Free Comic Book Day, which, for shame on anyone who missed Free Comic Book Day, Super Dinosaur number 1 actually was one of the free comic book titles.
That's totally awesome.
So, and a lot of stores, honestly, sometimes will keep the stock that they didn't get rid of and do, like, little promos with it a lot of times. So maybe if you go visit your store and act really nice and say you're a bum and you miss a free comic book, they may have a copy of Super Dinosaurs still. But it's fun. It's put out by Image, you know.
And this just started, like...
This is number one.
And you have number two here.
Number two here, and that's it.
That's awesome.
That's all that's out right now.
What is the origin? Is that like a separate book? Or
this is it. I thought there was an origin special, but number one was the origin special.
I'm kind of stoked on this.
Yeah, it's totally goofy. I mean, on this one, literally, they make a snowsuit for the dinosaur, and he snowboards down a mountain with the kid to go fight the enemy. I mean, it's hokey.
I was going to say it reminds me of like Johnny Quest or something.
Sure, yeah, like that kind of fun title. And from what I remember from a couple interviews I saw with Kirkman, before he announced the title, he was talking about what he was working on. And everybody's like, what is it? And he was like, it's not Walking Dead. He's like, that's what I'm working on, not Walking Dead.
Right.
And they were like, what does that mean? He's like, it's not Walking Dead at all. And this is probably about as far from Walking Dead as you could feasibly get.
Yeah. So good for him.
So it's fun. I just wanted to go over that and kind of recommend a book of the week.
I just want to know more about this. So I can't wait to see what happens.
Well, you're welcome to borrow these two issues and read them if you
awesome.
Like.
Awesome. That's totally awesome.
Also in comics, because we're right in the beginning of it, so, and I keep recommending this series because it's so fucking phenomenal, but that Cobra, G.I. Joe Cobra series where Cobra got shot in the head, we're like three issues into the Civil War, and it is fucking phenomenal. So,
really?
Like, it's not too late. You can go pick up probably the whole run of the Civil War series for $9 right now, and it is really good.
Check it out.
Can I ask a tangential question?
Yeah.
So as far as like maybe me and other types of readers like in comic books go, like I don't know that I would have the capacity to like have so many books. Like, would you recommend? Like, would it be okay to try to read these digitally? Like, is there something?
I have a new digital app on my phone called Comixology, and they do DC and Image, and I picked up a couple other titles.
And I guess my next question would be, is there currently an app that is, like, maybe more widely platformed than just, like, the iPhone?
I don't think there's... Well, yeah. All like, the apps are Android, iPhone.
Computer. Oh, so everything kind of, like, spreads across. I wouldn't be, like... I don't want to be stuck on a
I think platform. The only one that's iPhone only is Dark Horse's app.
So I could subscribe to these,
but
like,
even that'll go to
whatever device I go to, like, maybe I could read it on my laptop. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Chrome. The Chrome reader for Marvel is really good, as Ash has used.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Of course you could read these digitally. I have no issue with it. I just enjoy going to the comic shop and reading comics.
I guess I'm saying, is it okay? Is that still, like, you know?
I mean, depending on who you ask, if you go into a record store and say, is it okay if I buy all my shit on iTunes, they're going to tell you no.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
I just want to know what the flavor is.
The
like.
Industry is moving that way somewhat, but I don't know that they're going to drop this entirely yet.
Okay.
But check out Comixology. Mm-hmm. That's on Android and I think online. And then the Marvel app. The problem is there's not really one app to rule them all yet. There's not there is not your Amazon of digital comic books.
So maybe that would be a reason to stick with the physical copy.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on what you're looking for ownership. I don't know what the pricing is for some. It's usually cheaper. It's probably like these are $2.99 to $3.99, mm-hmm. and the digital ones I think are like $1 to $1.99.
Okay.
And you said the Marvel one was
they did a
subscription, right?
Which was great. It was unlimited. I read literally like 30 X-23 comics in 2 days.
Yeah,
and it was amazing.
Yeah, their app's great. I mean, I haven't run... I've used probably about 4 different apps, and they've all been awesome. I haven't really had an issue with any of them.
Okay.
But I haven't really dove... I haven't really dived. Dove?
Dovified?
Dovin? Let's go.
Like,
I'm going to say Dovin.
I haven't really, like, jumped straight into one of them, like, way in to buy a bunch and see how they handle your library and stuff like that.
Okay. So I was just kind of curious about that.
Cool. So we're going to do our fall TV Death Watch?
Yeah, so to wrap up the episode today, we are going to do the thing we said we were going to do last episode, which is our fall TV Death Watch. And this is how it works. I've got a spreadsheet laid out here. It's got all of our names, and it's got all of the new shows coming out on all of the different networks and a link to the show. So I'm going to name a show. I'm going to read the description really quick.
good, because I don't know
what happens. I know, because we don't all know all the shows, but I'm pretty sure from the description we can probably pick out what we think.
Okay, I like that.
I'm going to name the show, read the description. I'll probably, if there's a brief cast listing, I'll give you that. And
okay.
And then we will say how many episodes from zero to the whole season.
Okay.
Which we would assume is probably about 24, but usually Death Week is, what, 13, somewhere in there, like about half.
Yeah. And if it's a mid-season show, then, like, it'll have to be, like, we'll just have whatever it is if it turns out to be a mid-season show.
Well, but if it's a mid-season show...
That could be 12.
Does it still not do a full run?
It could be 12 if it's a half season.
We'll guess. Yeah. We'll pull this off as best. It's the first time we're doing this, so we'll do as well as we can.
Okay.
All right. Everybody ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So first up, we have Two Broke Girls.
Maybe it's important to note that we're starting with CBS.
I'm going
to
say that. Okay. So we have Two Broke Girls on CBS... You ready for this description?
Yes.
The cast is Max, played by Kat Dennings, Caroline, played by Beth Bears, Han Lee, played by Matthew Moy, Oleg, played by Jonathan Kite, and Earl, played by Garrett Morris. So the only name you probably really know there is Kat Dennings. Two Broke Girls is a comedy about two young women waitressing at a greasy spoon diner who strike up an unlikely friendship in the hopes of launching a successful business. If only they can raise the cash. Sassy streetwise Max works two jobs just to get by, one of which is waiting tables during the night shift at the retro-hip Williamsburg Diner. Sophisticated Caroline is an uptown trust fund princess who's having a run of bad luck that forces her to reluctantly give waitressing a shot. At first, Max sees Caroline as yet another in a long line of inept servers she must cover for, but she's surprised to find that Caroline has much substance as she does style. When Caroline discovers Max's knack for baking amazing cupcakes... She sees a lucrative future for them, but they first need to raise their startup money. While they save their tips, they'll stay at the restaurant working with Oleg, an overly flirtatious Russian cook, Earl, a 75-year-old cool cat cashier, and Han Lee, the new eager-to-please owner of the diner. Working together, these two broke girls living in one expensive city might just find the perfect recipe for their big break. Michael Patrick King from Sex and the City and writer-comedian Whitney Cummings are the executive producers for Warner Brothers Television on this one. So that is Two Broke Girls on CBS. Let me pull up one other thing that we're going to do here, which is this. So that is going to be airing on Monday. Its lead-in is How I Met Your Mother, and it leads out to 2.5 Men, starring Ashton Kutcher now.
Okay.
So, my name's first, but I don't know, how are we going to do this here? Two Broke Girls.
You go first, then. We'll just rotate the orders.
Are we going to give brief reasoning, too? Just, like, super brief?
Whatever you want, yeah, sure.
I think CBS, lead-in from How I Met Your Mother, lead out to 2.5 Men with Ashton Kutcher. I think this thing's going the whole way. I think it'll make the whole season.
Okay.
I agree, just because of the fact that it has 2.5 Men on after it and How I Met Your Mother on before it. I think that this is probably the safest place it could be on the schedule. Kat Dennings is also pretty awesome.
Sure.
I'm actually surprised to see her do television. I thought she'd probably just stick with... I mean, she was just in fucking Thor, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. Like, you figure she could just do movies, but so yeah, I say full run.
I think for the same reasons that both of you said, like it's like a can't, like they would have to go out of their way to fail.
Yeah,
being in between
the
two shows that they're in between.
Yeah,
so all I'm right. Say whole season.
Whole season all the way across.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we've got Unforgettable on CBS, starring Cary Wells as Poppy Montgomery as Cary Wells, Dylan Walsh as Al Burns, Michael Gaston as Mike Costello, Kevin Rankin, and Daya Vidaya. Which is an awesome name. Unforgettable stars Poppy Montgomery as Cary Wells. Poppy Montgomery, by the way, came out of NCIS or one of those shows. She's from another big procedural show.
Yeah, so. I think it was Special Victim.
Special Victim. No, not SVU. It was something else.
So what about getting raped?
I don't think she was on SVU.
Is that the right one?
Yeah, that's the right one. Anyways, she was on one. I don't think she was on an NBC one is what I'm saying. I think she was on CBS, but... Unforgettable stars Poppy Montgomery as Cary Wells, an enigmatic former police detective with a rare condition that makes her memory so flawless that every place, every conversation, every moment of joy, and every heartbreak is forever embedded in her mind. It's not just that she doesn't forget anything, she can't. Except for one thing, the details that would help solve her sister's long-ago murder. Cary has tried to put her past behind her, but she's unexpectedly reunited with her ex-boyfriend and partner, NYPD detective Al Burns, when she consults on a homicide case. His squad detectives, Detective Mike Costello and Al's right-hand man, and Detective Rose Saunders, the junior member of the team, and Detective Nina Inyara, a sassy street-smart cop. Being back on the job after a break feels surprisingly right for Carrie, despite her conflicted feelings for Al. She decides to permanently join his unit as a detective solving homicides, most notably, the unsolved murder of her sister. All she needs to do is remember. Executive produced by for Sony Television by no one we know. And this is also airing on, or no, this is airing on Tuesday with a lead in from NCIS, both NCIS at 8, NCIS LA at 9, and then Unforgettable at 10.
Is that 10?
It's at 10. Yeah. Anybody got any feelings?
I think it's a 6 episode.
Six episodes. Making a jump here.
6 episodes.
I'm going to give this one 12 episodes. So I'm going to say about half a season.
All right.
Because I feel like at this, at, when it's on, like what is happening in the show, it's going to be too much for CBS viewership.
Here's my problem with that. Who watches NCIS?
I know. I mean, I know.
They're going to be asleep by 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock is really
That's
late.
What I was about to say. Okay. So my issue with it is I think if it had been at 9 and was surrounded by NCIS's, the show would go whole season. I think at 10 o'clock, with just a lead-in from NCIS LA, I don't see it making it the whole time. And it doesn't sound good, to be honest with you. I'm actually going to go... No, I won't get pulled that quick. I'm going to go 10. I'll go 10.
10? Okay. Excellent. What's next?
So next up, we've got Person of Interest on CBS. If you aren't catching a pattern for how CBS does shows
yet. Yeah. Tell me about another street-savvy cop.
Street-savvy with super memory.
Person of Interest stars Jim Caviezel. That's the guy from Jesus movie, isn't it?
Yes, this is the J.J. Abrams.
Ah, yes it is. All right, so Person of Interest stars Jim Caviezel, Emmy Award winner Michael Emerson, and Academy Award nominee Taraji P. Henson, who was in his Undercovers, wasn't it? Wasn't she?
I don't know.
Let me take a look.
In a crime thriller about a presumed dead former CIA agent who turns up with a mysterious billionaire to prevent violent crimes by using their own brand of vigilante justice. Caviezel's character Reese, special training in covert operation, appeals to Finch, a software genius who invented a program that uses pattern recognition to identify people about to be involved in violent crimes. Using state-of-the-art surveillance technology, the two work outside of the law using Reese's adept skills and Finch's unlimited wealth to unravel the mystery of the person of interest and stop the crime before it happens. Reese's actions catch the attention of the NYPD, including homicide detective Carter and Fusco, a cop who Reese uses to his advantage. With infinite crimes to investigate, Reese and Finch find that the right person with the right information at the right time can change everything. Produced by J.J. Abrams, Brian Burke, both from Lost, and Academy Award-winning Jonathan Nolan from Memento, and Dave Semmel from Heroes, and Greg Plageman from Cold Case. That's a lot of executive producers.
Mm-hmm.
So this show is airing on Thursday. I guess I could tell you what it's going up against, too. Ooh, I was going to get crushed. Its lead-in is another brand-new show, How to Be a Gentleman. Its lead-out is The Mentalist at 10 o'clock. I'm just going to be honest with you. This show is going up against Grey's Anatomy, Bones, and The Office.
Wow.
So this sounds more like an Alias J.J. Abrams title than it does. And it also sounds exactly like the plot of the movie that Tom Cruise was in.
Yeah.
Called
Minority Report.
Yeah.
So, Person of Interest, CBS. I am going to say half a season and it's out. Because it's Abrams. It's up against probably the toughest night it's going to could be up against. And it has another brand new show for a lead-in.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know that it's getting set up to do very well.
Yeah, because you could see people watching Grey's Anatomy and then flipping over to The Mentalist.
Yeah, without...
Or Private Practice, I guess, for that matter. So,
yeah. So I'm going to do the old 12 shows.
I'm going to agree with you. As much as I'd love to think this is going to stick around, because Jim Caviezel and the guy that played Ben Linus are both phenomenal actors.
Mm-hmm.
But... Those are some hard shows to compete against.
Yeah.
I mean, The Office Bones, yeah, Grey's Anatomy, that's ridiculous. Yeah. So.
Just to be different, and I don't know if this network does this, I'm going to say that it's going to get, like, I'm going to say, like, 19 episodes, where the last 5 episodes are aired in the summertime.
So it's gonna get. They're gonna do the full run, but not during the fall.
Yeah, they're gonna. They're gonna order all the shows.
Write that, 19.
Yeah, put 19. They're gonna order all the shows. It'll get canceled, and then they'll
just yank run it, out. Put some junk in there, and then yep. play. You know, they'll do NCIS reruns.
And, yeah, and then run them out. Yeah.
All right. Next up, we've got How to Be a Gentleman. It's on CBS.
I already know what the answer is.
This stars Kevin Dillon from Entourage and David Hornsby, who I'm not entirely familiar with, as well as Dave Foley from
Kids in the Hall.
Kids in the Hall. Marilyn Ratchscub from
24.
Reese Darby and Nancy Lenihan. How to Be a Gentleman, inspired by the book of the same name, oh boy, is comedy about the unlikely friendship between a traditional refined writer and an unrefined personal trainer. Andrew Carlson, David Hornsby, is an etiquette columnist whose devotion to ideals from a more civilized time has led to a life detached from modern society. Infectiously optimistic Burt Lansing, Kevin Dillon, is a reformed bad boy from Andrew's past who inherited a fitness center but can still be rude, loud, and sloppy. When Andrew's editor, Jerry, Dave Foley, tells him to put a modern sexy twist on his column or be fired, he hires Bert as a life coach in the hopes of learning to be less gentleman and more real man. Andrew's mom, Diane, and his bossy sister, Janet, support the plan, as well as Janet's husband, Mike. If he was allowed to have an opinion, though, Andrew and Bert's views may be centuries apart. They may find that their other's missing link, David Hornsby, David Hornsby is from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Really? His picture's really tiny. I can't tell who it is.
Oh, wow.
David Hornsby is from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Oh, he's... You guys don't watch that show, so you're not going to know who he is anyways. He's a guy they call Cricket, who's a homeless dude. I don't know. This show is the lead-in for Person of Interest on Thursday night, up against Parks and Rec, The X Factor, Vampire Diaries, and the other new show, Charlie's Angels. I'm going to tell you exactly what this show is. You ready?
Yeah.
This is the show they bought when they thought Two and a Half Men wasn't coming back.
Sure. Okay.
Got it. I think they bought this and said, oh shit, Charlie Sheen's going crazy. We're not going to have Two and a Half Men next season. Buy something that'll sit in its spot just for a season. We don't care what it is. And got this comedy about a wildly mismatched couple of guys who need to learn how to get through life together.
So, you say...
I say it's not... I don't... I'm going to do the like 6. I don't think it's even going to make it halfway.
I'm giving it
3.
3? 3. I'm border 3 on that one. That's a really bad show.
I'm giving it 5.
Yeah.
I mean, just because it's up against Parks and Rec and a results show for...
It's up against X Factor, I mean, which...
Well, it's X Factor results show, and results, like, American Idol results show is still, like, in the top 5 every week.
Yeah. Also, that description sounded like someone vomiting. It was like, and this guy loves him, and he's a fitness coach and a life trainer. You're like, what is... I don't even know what
this
that
sounds
shit
like
is.
The, it sounds like the TV show about the Geico caveman. Like, oh, you God. Might as well have been reading
oh,
that.
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay.
All right, so the last new show for CBS is a show called A Gifted Man, starring Patrick Wilson, which is... I know who that is.
The Owl from Watchmen.
Yes. Patrick Wilson is Michael Holt, Jennifer L., Julie Benz... No, Liam Aiken and Margot Martindale. Julie Benz sounds really familiar too.
She's from Dexter and Buffy.
There you go. A Gifted Man is a drama about a brilliant, charismatic surgeon whose life changes forever when his deceased ex-wife begins teaching him the meaning of life from the hereafter. Michael Holt is an exceptional doctor who lives a materialistic life of luxury thanks to his work-obsessed career and powerful and wealthy patients. However, Michael's ordered world is rocked when his ex-wife, Anna, an idealistic free clinic doctor and the love of his life, mysteriously appears to him. Michael's offbeat sister, Christina, a single mom to her teenage son, Milo, is thrilled that Anna's back in her brother's life, even if it's an illusion, because Michael was always a better person with her. Curious about Michael's sudden change in behavior and his efficient assistant, is his efficient assistant, Rita. It's a weird sentence. Yeah. When Anna asks Michael to go to her clinic to help keep it running, he meets Autumn, a volunteer carrying on Anna's work with the underprivileged. God, how many characters are they introducing in this paragraph? Touched by those in need and accepting of Anna's compassionate presence, Michael's attitude towards serving the rich and poor is turned upside down, and he begins to see that there's room in his life for everyone. Academy Award nominees Susanna Grant from Erin Brockovich, Academy Award winner Jonathan Demme, Silence of the Lambs, Sarah Timmerman, Carly Beverly, and Neil Baer are executive producers for this show. This show is airing on Friday. It's an hour-long drama up against Extreme Home Makeover, Nikita, Kitchen Nightmares, and Chuck. Which, Friday's the graveyard for shows, but that's not extremely tough competition either on any end of that. So the new drama for CBS, what's everybody think?
Scott? On Friday, up against things that are not that. And because, man, I don't know. I'm going to say it goes the full season.
You think it's going to make it?
Yeah.
I think it will make it the whole season and will not get picked up for a second season.
That's agreed. What I think.
I'm saying it's only going to make it 12. Mainly just because I don't like medical dramas.
It doesn't sound like the... Well, I mean, it's set in a hospital or...
It's going to be like a doctor, and then there's going to be like Julie Benn's ghost haunting the doctor saying, hey, cut his heart out.
Exactly. Alrighty, so that's it for CBS. We're moving on to NBC now. The first one is, I think, the best title of all of them.
Let's hear it.
Is Playboy Club.
Yeah.
All right. Starring Eddie Cibrian, Leah Renee, Jenna Dewan, Amber Heard, Laura Benanti, David Krumholtz, Wes Ramsey, and Naturi Naughton. And there's the about. In the early 60s, and the legend... It's the early... Oh, this one's... Sorry, this one's not a narrative. It's the early 60s, and the legendary Playboy Club in Chicago is the door to all your fantasies. And the key is the most sought-after status symbol of its time. Step inside the seductive world of the bunny, the epitome of beauty and service, and rub shoulders with the decade's biggest mobsters, politicos, and entertainers. With all these larger-than-life ambitions, there are even greater secrets, like when innocent new bunny Marine, who wants to take over the world by storm, accidentally kills one of the Windy City's most powerful mafia bosses. And the only person capable of covering it up and protecting it is Nick Dalton, a man who once worked for the mob but is about to run for district attorney. Bunny Alice is married but hiding an explosive personal life, while Bunny Janie is running from a past that threatens to catch up with her. It seems everyone has a secret, none more so than Maureen, who may not even be the innocent orphan she appears to be. Thank goodness Hef's Playboy Mansion is open after hours for a little R&R and burying your past. This is from Academy Award-winning executive producers Brian Grazer, executive producer Chad Hoge, and director Alan Taylor of Mad Men fame.
So what is this show trying to do?
So this show is up against... It's on NBC. It is airing on Monday nights, and it's not till 10 o'clock.
But
it's got nothing on Fox, nothing on CW. It's up against Castle and Hawaii Five-0.
That alone. Like, we don't watch Castle, but people watch Castle.
People watch Castle, but this is a different... This is not Castle.
Do you think this show is put here to for fans of Mad Men?
Because I think they're trying to go for stuff. Mad Men,
Here's my problem. If this were on Showtime or HBO, it or would AMC. Do really, really well. It is a show called The Playboy Club about a gentleman's club where they're not going to be able to show shit. There's not going to be any nudity. There's not going to be any, like, heavy drug use, any real violence. This seems to me like it's trying to almost be like a Sopranos, just from the sound of it, like a really heavy drama with some, personal, like, stories kind of interjected. And I don't think that really works on standard cable television or on the main networks.
I agree, because I can't think of one. I think it doesn't even need... It'd be great on HBO or Showtime, but I think AMC, FX, like, the cable channels that don't mind airing that kind of drama, you know, would probably do well with it, too.
Yeah.
I don't think this is the one NBC is going to fight for. How's that? I don't think this is the new one they're going to be like, we're really going to sink our teeth into this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
I'm going to go like, I'm going 5.
And plus the name of it alone, you're going to have a lot of spouses and things. And if like, you know, your significant other's like, I'm watching the Playboy Club. Why are you watching that? You know, and that's just kind of...
The name is wrong.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
I think just out of spite, just because like this show reminds me like maybe like the same amount of effort that you'd have to put in to get a show like Studio 60 on the air.
No, man.
Like, you canceled Studio 60 on me, and I'm still upset about that. So.
That's what I was trying to think. Studio 60 was
not
half
even a
season?
Full season, yeah. It was a half.
Yeah, so...
I don't think it's going to make it that
I'm going to give this a 10.
You're going to give it 10?
Yep.
Gosh.
I'm going to say 7.
7. Alrighty. Next up, another NBC show. I think this one is a comedy.
Yay.
So this one's called Up All Night. It is written by Saturday Night Live alum. Good Lord. Starring Christina Applegate, Maya Rudolph, Will Arnett, and James Pumphrey. So that's quite a comedic cast.
Mm-hmm.
About the show, did I say the name yet? It's called Up All Night.
Yeah.
Life is all about balance. So what happens when you throw a new baby into it? Reagan and her husband.
Damn it. It sounded so good.
Reagan and her husband, Chris, are the proud new parents of baby Amy. She may have been unexpected, but life's curveballs can be a godsend, literally, unless you have a career that needs attention, which is exactly what Reagan has. So bucking tradition, and that's Christina Applegate and Will Arnett, who are married. So bucking tradition, they decide Reagan's the one going back to work while Chris is going to be the stay-at-home dad. Easy, right? Well, not quite. Back at work at her high-pressure job, Reagan immediately feels the push and pull of motherhood and her career while her self-involved co-worker, Ava, Maya Rudolph, can't believe her best friend now has a baby. Nor can she even remember if it's a boy or a girl. Then her Facebook generation assistant reminds Reagan of the freewheeling lifestyle she and Chris once had. She also remembers that no matter how rowdy the partying once was, she always managed to get home, something that makes her very proud. Determined to prove that she and Chris still have a hot love life, and that she can be the perfect wife, mother, and career woman, Reagan spins a little bit out of control, but she eventually realizes that Amy is her new number one priority, and somehow everything, except maybe Chris, is going to take a backseat to their new bundle of joy. This is executive produced by Lorne Michaels, and directed by James Griffiths, and then written by Emily Spivey from Saturday Night Live. So this is airing on Wednesday nights, at 8 o'clock, up against the new X Factor, the new Hater, Survivor, and The Middle.
The only thing I can imagine, like, my first question is, why is this show not on Thursday night?
Because that's where they're putting the new Whitney show.
Right, and then it looks like, I mean, based on the other things I see here, this is supposed to compete directly with The Middle, because the other shows are not comedies. Right? Is The Middle
a Modern comedy? Family's a comedy. The Middle's a comedy.
But I'm saying, like...
Oh, that hour, that time.
Yeah, NBC is competing with ABC here on Wednesday night.
Well, because, I mean, Survivor and The X Factor are reality shows, and I don't even... We'll find out what Hater is in a little bit.
Yeah.
I love the cast.
Yeah.
Love the producer, you know, Lorne Michaels. I'm going to say whole season just because it's my...
Because you want it to.
I want it to last the whole season.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I'm going to say
I feel
thing.
Like this could go one of two ways because I feel like we didn't do this back when Modern Family came out, but I know when I first heard about Modern Family, I was like, oh, God, another freaking family sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched it, and it's brilliant. Like, the show's written brilliantly, so I'm hoping that maybe this takes this common trope and actually does something worthwhile with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to go full season as well. Just based on raw talent alone.
Yeah.
Like,
and Lorne Michaels, you know? Like,
yeah.
He does wield some power at NBC, so I feel like if he wanted to try to keep a show around, you know.
He'll just have it moved to Thursday. He'll just boot something.
Not much to boot. I mean, I think honestly what would happen there is if Whitney starts to fail on Thursday and this is doing well on Wednesday, they might
move
do one of those things to boost this one up. So next up, we've got a show called Free Agents on NBC, starring Hank Azaria, Natasha Leggero, Catherine Hahn, who's been on a ton of stuff, Anthony Head, Joe Latruglio from The State, Mo Mandel, and Al Madrigal. Alex is recently divorced and Helen lost her fiance a year ago. Man, reading more of these just is kind of getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
Obviously, these two are definitely not ready to be dating again. So naturally, they end up in bed together one night. Oops. And they're co-workers. Double oops. At least they have one thing in common. They're both in need of getting back on the horse again, but unable to figure out how. Despite their little romantic encounter, however, they decide to just remain friends. Helen insists that this has nothing to do with Alex crying like a baby after sex, and Alex tries to reassure Helen that she'll have no trouble finding a new boyfriend as soon as she removes the pictures of her dead fiancé that are all over her apartment. The rest of the office tries to get Alex back out there, but no matter how many douchey shirts they make him buy, he's never going to be a ladies' man. His colleagues aren't actually much help. From the boss who can't wait to hear about Alex's sexual exploits to the eternal player who wants Alex to be Alex's new wingman. When he finally gets up the courage to go on a date, Helen finds herself just a little jealous, which is what Alex secretly wanted all along, and one drunk dial later, they end up going back in bed together. Looks like this might be the start of something awkward.
I don't like this.
This crooked workplace romantic comedy written by John Enbom of Party Down fame, which is actually really good, and directed by Emmy Award winner Todd Holland from Malcolm in the Middle, proves you can try to put yourself back out there, but sometimes what you need is right in front of you, even if it's a really bad idea. So again, Hank Azaria, Joe Lutruglio, Catherine Hahn, these are all pretty good comedic actors. You know, written by Party Down, guy from Party Down, which if no one watched Party Down actually is a really good show. It's pretty damn funny. I don't... NBC, man, trying to be the comedy bastion. So this show is on...
same time.
Same day. It's on Wednesday at 8:30, so it's going up against a new show called Suburgatory, and then Survivor and X Factor.
I just feel like, against Survivor and X Factor, like, those two shows will kill it in that time slot on their own. I don't know how much is left for, like for ABC and NBC in this, at this point, you know?
But do they know that? Do they know they're going to take less of a share because of those two, you know, giants?
If that's what they're planning for, then... I mean, two new shows in this Wednesday time slot up against these, like, other reality shows, like...
What do you think, Ash?
Oh, it just sounds awful. Like, I mean, like, it could be... But the general premise of it is just so, like, nothing I'd ever want to watch. Like, you know, it's just, like, it doesn't even sound like these are people... The thing about these sitcoms is you have to want to hang out with these people.
Yeah.
You have to, like, want to be in their presence and watch their life and adventures. And, like, if they're dicks and, like... people that seem uninteresting, you don't want to be there with them, so you don't watch the fucking show.
I thought Better Off Ted seemed like a better show than this, and that just, I mean, that didn't make it either, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. There was a show with Job from, what that we just said, the other show he's on. Anyways, I don't think this is, like, 3. I'm gonna give it 3.
I'm giving 1. It half season.
1.
1. Here, pull it.
So why don't you just say never airs?
It's going to air once.
All right.
Once.
There's going to be such an outcrying of disgust.
So next up is one that I'm somewhat anticipating.
Who is Whitney?
Whitney Cummings. She's a comedian. You really wouldn't have seen her. She's on Chelsea lately a lot. And she does... she's done a couple of the roasts. She's slayed on the roast. She's on 2 roasts and, like, gets up and just destroys. Like, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous.
Okay.
Have you seen her do any of the roasts?
I haven't seen her roasts.
It's kind of insane. So they say marriage is the number one cause of divorce. For Alex and Whitney, it's one of many reasons they're determined not to take the plunge. Alex is actually the guy we interviewed, Chris D'Elia, so he's a lead. And then Whitney Cummings is the other lead. After going to yet another one of the friends' weddings, Whitney realizes that she and Alex are dangerously close to relationship boredom. She sees it happen all the time. Pretty soon you're not dressing up for each other, you're not having enough sex, and you start fighting. Determined to not let that happen to them, Whitney consults her close circle of opinionated friends and snaps into action. A few awkward sexy costumes and one botched seductive evening later, they end up in the ER and after Alex gets a concussion from a compromising position. Not exactly the mind-blowing experience she wanted, but you know what? That's alright. Their relationship might not be perfect on paper, but it works, and they really do love each other. Bright young comedian Whitney Cummings brings her unique and hilarious perspective on love to this new comedy series that proves there's no right way to be together, but there are plenty of wrong ways. Starring, we're probably not going to know a lot of these people, Malik Panchaly, which he was on something. He might have been on Outsourced. Dan O'Brien, Chris D'Elia, Whitney Cummings, Zoe Lister-Jones, and Rhea Seahorn.
I really liked Outsourced.
I know.
So I'm upset that got canceled.
So this show is probably the only place that you can have a strong lead-in on NBC, and it's let in from The Office at 9:30 on Thursday up against Bones, Secret Circle, Person of Interest, and Grey's Anatomy.
I think it's going to do pretty good. I think it's because those are all really heavy dramas that it's going up against, and I think some people aren't going to want to see that, you know? Person of Interest, Bones, Grey's Anatomy, I think it's going to do okay.
This kind of has like a Friends vibe to me. I feel like if that's what's
going on. A raunchier Friends.
Yeah, I feel like if that's what's going on, I think this will survive.
I don't. Okay. And here's why. One, it's in a doomed time slot. Every show that has gone in at 9:30 after The Office has been canceled that's been on NBC, which started out as Outsourced, then moved to Perfect Couples, and...
I will admit that this show does not seem like any of the other shows that are on Thursday night on NBC.
Like
the other comedies.
Now, if this was at 8:30 and they moved Parks and Rec to 9 and The Office to 9:30, mm-hmm. I might be like, oh, I could see it surviving just because people won't turn it off.
Yeah.
Well, what is missing from this is 30 Rock, so at best this could be a half a season.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. I think it'll make a half season and then they'll pop 30 Rock back in place and it'll be done.
So because 30 Rock is coming back, we know that.
Well, what they did last time was pull Parks and Rec.
Right. So either someone does a half season, one of these shows goes to 7:30, or Whitney only gets a half season.
I think Parks and Rec's got too much juice behind it now.
That show's
really
strong.
I think
season
two really picked up.
Yeah.
And I just don't... This time slot is honestly a doomed time slot. Everything gets canceled in it. I think Whitney's going to make... I think you're right, Scott. I think that half season's going to be...
Okay. I'm going to say half season, Ash.
I'm going to say full season.
Full season.
I'm pretty optimistic.
Alrighty. Almost done with NBC.
Prime Suspect.
This is called Prime Suspect. Yeah, I'm waiting for it to load. Come on, NBC.com.
There is something missing from this list that I'm super stoked about, and I don't think we got a chance to talk about it too much last week. It's a show called Awake. Did I talk about this last week?
No.
Awake, is that the one with the guys living two lives?
Yeah.
Yeah, that does look really good.
That looks tremendous. I guess it's not in the catalog for the fall, so maybe it's going to be a mid-season thing. But it actually sounds a lot like the Doctor one that we talked about briefly on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes this one, I think, a little better is that this guy is living two lives. He doesn't know which one is reality, I guess, if either are reality.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning of the show, he gets into a car accident. His wife and son die in the car accident. And in one reality, his wife is still alive. He goes to sleep. He wakes up. He's in the other reality where his son is alive.
Yeah.
And he's a cop solving crimes. And clues from one reality are meaningful in the other reality to solve crimes in both. So, like, things cross over between the two. And it's like when you watch a trailer, it's an extremely heavy drama.
And everybody on either side obviously doesn't know that the other side is happening. So like it's a really crazy...
Kind of has like a Life on Mars kind of vibe.
I love that show.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
But much more heavy.
Yeah.
Prime Suspect.
Let's get into these procedurals.
Okay.
It's being a homicide detective. If being a homicide detective in New York isn't tough enough, having to contend with a male-dominated police department to get respect makes it much tougher. And that's exactly what Jane Timoney has to do. She's an outsider.
Played by Gretchen Mol.
What's that?
Is it played by Gretchen Mol?
No.
Then I won't watch it.
She's an outsider who was just transferred to a new precinct where a fraternity of cops isn't willing to give her the benefit of the doubt, especially given the way they think she got the job after an illicit affair with her boss. Jane is by no means perfect, and with her own vices and questionable past, she can be forceful, willful, rude, and downright reckless. She's also a brilliant cop with an uncanny ability to see what others miss and get inside a criminal's mind like no one else. While she wouldn't admit it, she wants the respect of the men in her life, including her commanding officer, her fellow detectives, and her complicated boyfriend and his young son. But above all, she keeps her eye on one thing, the prime suspect. From director Peter Berg, who does Friday Night Lights, comes the reimagining of the British television hit. So this is a BBC show getting reimagined into a US show.
Okay, it's up against Private Practice and The Mentalist. NBC also tried to do a show last year called Chase, which I think was, like, was the name of the show with, like, a female U.S. Marshal who was, like, a badass. Same thing. Like, to me, this is similar premise. Like, I'm giving it, like, 10 episodes.
I'm giving it, like, 8. I think it's going to make about a quarter of the way through a season and then get yanked.
I'm saying I'll be the dick and say 6.
6.
So finally, I think the only show that that's non-comedy that we're looking forward to.
And oddly enough, there are 2 fantasy shows coming out this season. Like, fairy book shows. And this is one of them.
This is one of them. It's the last show on NBC that's new. It's called Grimm.
Yeah.
Remember the fairy tales your parents used to tell you before bedtime? Well, those weren't stories. They were warnings. Detective Nick Burkhart thought he was ready for the grim reality of working homicide in Portland, Oregon. That is, until he started to see things he couldn't quite explain. Like a gorgeous woman suddenly transforming into a hideous hag, or an average Joe turning into a vicious troll. Then after a panic visit from his only living relative, Nick discovers the truth about his visions. He's not like everyone else. He's a descendant of an elite group of hunters known as Grimms, who are charged with stopping the proliferation of supernatural creatures in the world. And so begins his new life journey, albeit a reluctant one at first, as he solves crimes with his partner who knows something about Nick has radically changed, but can't quite put his finger on it. Along the way, Nick finds himself unexpectedly getting some help on some of the more difficult cases from Monroe, a guy who seems normal at first, but is soon revealed to be what you might call a big bad wolf. Literally!
Whoa!
While the Brothers Grimm wrote fairy tales that children have adored for generations, imagine if the villains were real and Nick was the only one who could stop them. From executive producers David Greenwalt, Angel and Buffy, and Jim Koof, Angel and National Treasure, or Kauf, comes a new world of police work where all cases have a storybook connection, but not always happily ever after. Starring David, I'm not going to say his last name correctly, Russell Hornsby, Bitsy Tulloch, Reggie Lee, Sasha Roy, and Silas Ware Mitchell. On NBC, and it's up against
Fringe,
Supernatural, CSI New York, and Shark the Tank.
Well, why would they put one of the only genre shows on all season up against the other two genre shows?
Maybe that's what they're doing.
Stupidest thing.
Yeah.
Well, that makes you have to choose. Obviously, Supernatural and Fringe have massive cult followings.
Supernatural has a gigantic.
Yeah, it's on like season like 10 or something.
Yes, Supernatural has a massive following.
Yeah.
I have total like blinders for Fringe, and granted, like, I don't have cable, so all of this I'll be watching on Hulu.
Right,
anyways.
But we're the exception.
So, yes, I will watch Grimm, but if in real time I had to choose, like, I would be watching Fringe.
Oh, yeah.
And I want this show to succeed. This almost seems like it could be a movie. Like, a 2-hour, like...
I think it's gonna go the way of the cape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, heroes ended, they tried the cape. Cape didn't work, they're gonna try this.
I'm giving it, like, 4 episodes.
4?
I don't think it's going to...
I think it's going
to
go 8.
It sounds great. I'd like it to last. I just don't... I don't think it's going to...
I think the Cape got about 12. I'll give this one...
Cape didn't get 12.
It got 10 to 12.
It did, yeah.
Did it really?
The rest went online.
Yeah. Oh, they put out the rest on Hulu.
Yeah.
After it went off the air.
But they didn't do 12 on the air, did they? I thought they only got, like, 6 on the air, and then they yanked it and put, like, the rest 10. Online.
Mm.
4 might be low then, but I'll stick with it.
Oh, 10. The Cape got 10 episodes.
I don't think all 10 were originally.
No, but they got 10 total. And, like, that was it. Final episode 10.
That's what I'm saying. I think they only aired, like, 4 or 5, and then they yanked it and put the rest on Hulu.
I'm going to give Grimm 10.
Okay.
I'm going to give it.
I can name that song in 2 minutes. I think it's really bad timing. I think it's the wrong channel. I think if they should have put this on CW and not NBC, but, you know. Whatever.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Or even Sci-Fi. I mean, those are all owned by the same people, and they could have put that show anywhere.
Man, Grimm on Sci-Fi, I feel like that would have killed a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
ABC.
First show on ABC is a show called Last Man Standing. Today, it's a woman's world, and this man's man is on a mission to get men back to their rightful place in society.
Here we go.
Ready? You ready? Tim Allen returns to ABC in his new comedy from Jack Burdett, who did 30 Rock. Men may have built civilizations, invented the locomotive, and created ESPN, but they're about to find out that it's not a man's world anymore. You can't get manlier than Mike Baxter. He's the marketing director for an iconic outdoor sporting goods store. He loves to have adventures while he's traveling for work, and of course he drives a pickup truck. While Mike is king of the hill at work, he's the odd man out at home when he's dominated by women, namely his wife Vanessa and their three daughters, 22-year-old Kristen, 17-year-old Mandy, and 14-year-old Eve. After being a stay-at-home mom for years, Vanessa recently returned to the workplace and is quickly promoted, much to the dismay of her primarily male coworkers. As a result of Vanessa's increased workload, Mike is pulled into more hands-on parenting than ever before, starring Tim Allen, Nancy Travis, Molly Afram, Alexandra Krosny, Caitlin Dever, and Hector Elizondo. Executive produced by Jack Burdett from 30 Rock, Tim Allen, Becky Clements, and no one else that we know.
Up against this NCIS, 90210, Glee, and The Biggest Loser.
Ooh.
So,
sorry about that.
The problem there is Glee, probably more than anything else.
NCIS.
And NCIS. But my dad will watch this.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, there aren't really a lot of shows for, like, maybe, like, manly
you
men.
You only have to say Tim Allen, and my dad will watch this show. I mean, it's Tim fucking Allen. He's going to pull in an audience.
Even the premise is, like, remote. It's, like, it's very similar. Yeah, it's very similar.
Okay.
I'm going whole season.
Full season.
Yeah, I will too.
Maybe not our thing, but...
Yeah, I don't... I mean, obviously not one that I'm going to tune into every day, but it... when you say Tim Allen, and you say, you know, like... a manly half-hour comedy kind of show, I think that's not going to have any problems. So, next up, Pan Am on ABC. Pan Am, passion, jealousy, espionage. They do it all, and they do it at 30,000 feet.
What?
The style of the 1960s, the energy and excitement of the jet age, and a drama full of sexy entanglements deliciously mesh in this thrilling and highly original new series.
Whoa.
In this modern world, air travel represents the height of luxury, and Pan Am is the biggest name in the business. The planes are glamorous, the pilots are rock stars, and the stewardesses are the most desirable women in the world. Not only are these flyboys and girls young and good-looking, but to represent Pan Am, they also have to be educated, cultured, and refined. They're trained to handle everything from in-air emergencies to unwanted advances, all without rumpling their pristine uniforms or mussing their hair. There's Dean, a cocky, charismatic, and ambitious new pilot, the first of a new breed not trained in the war, on the sly against company policy, he's dating Bridget, a stunning beauty with a mysterious past. A rebellious bohemian, Maggie, Christina Ricci, turns into a buttoned-up professional for work so she can see the world. Rounding out the crew are flirtatious Colette and adventurous Kate, and finally, Laura, Kate's beauty queen younger sister, a runaway bride who recently fled a life of domestic boredom to take to the skies. Starring Christina Ricci, Kelly Garner, Carney Venace, Margot Robbie, Jonah Lotan, and Michael Mosley. This show is on what time?
It's on at 10 o'clock on Sunday. Okay, and here's the thing. You have to not want to watch Sunday Night Football on NBC. You have to not want to watch CSI Miami on CBS.
Right.
And you have to just be up at 10:30 and... 10 o'clock and want to watch something after Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
So if this is a girly show...
I think it is.
Really?
If this is a show for the ladies...
I think this is Mad Men aimed at the ladies.
Bank-worthy. I mean, like, all these stewards...
Like, if you got caught watching it, you would get spanked.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, if I was the 13-year-old me, this might have been something that I recorded with my VHS cassette. And watch when no one was around.
But I think this is going in there with Playboy Club trying to be Mad Men on a network channel.
I just don't get how long that premise could go. That seems like the plot to a movie. And then, like, how do you carry that on for 24 episodes?
I feel like doing all this, like, 60s stuff might be a little costly to maintain.
Yeah.
To keep it up, the appearance.
Yeah. I think the best point you can make is the one... Well, I don't know, though. Leading out of Desperate Housewives is not the worst lead out in the world.
Yeah.
It might maybe it'll go the whole season.
People will probably tune in for the first episode and go, okay, like, I want to see what this is about. I watched Desperate Housewives.
Did Hawaii Five-0 make it?
Yeah.
That show. That's pretty solid.
Good for them. Didn't watch it, but I love Grace Park, so good for her.
Yeah.
I'm going to go... My gut says it's not going to make it the whole season.
Right.
Ash, you got a prediction?
I say 6 episodes.
6? Oh, yeah, man.
I think it's not going to make it. That is a horrible... It's the worst time slot of all.
It is, but it's got a good... I mean, Desperate Housewives slays in that time spot.
It's so... I'm old now. It's fucking late.
Yeah.
Might as well be on at midnight, man. Shit.
People that get up for work in the morning. This show probably won't be on Hulu, so I'll never get to see it.
I'm going to say half season.
Yeah. I'll give it, just to be different, I'll give it 8 episodes.
Alrighty. A lot of men shows on ABC this year. This one's called Man Up. 3 modern men try to get in touch with their inner tough guys and redefine what it means to be a real man in this funny and relatable comedy. Will's grandfather fought in World War II. Will's father fought in Vietnam. Will plays Call of Duty on his PS3 and drinks non-dairy hazelnut creamer. So what happened to all the real men? They're still here. They just smell like pomegranate body wash now. Meet Will. His evolved sensitive nature is why his awesome wife, Teresa, married him. But Will and his friends find themselves wondering, in a world of axe ads and manscaping, what does it really mean to be a guy anymore? Will is more interested in finding the perfect gift for his son Nathan's 13th birthday party, than in doing his job selling insurance. Sensitive soul Craig still pines for his college ex. Lisa and Kenny clamp down on his anger and ask himself, what would Tobey Maguire do? When his ex, Brenda, Jesus Christ, sorry, sometimes I'm just saying names, I feel like, starts seeing a guy who is everything he's not and much better looking.
You have to keep a notepad.
I know.
After Craig crashes Lisa's wedding to try to win her back, they are all faced with an opportunity to man up and be like their forefathers. Starring literally no one that you've ever heard of.
Okay. So this show is going to come on after the Tim Allen show, which is called Last Man Standing. And then there's going to be another show about men and manliness.
And the show after it's Dancing with the Stars.
I mean, Last Man Standing, Man Up.
Oh, right. But these are 2 takes on that man concept. Right. Last Man Standing is Tim Allen doing a 90s man show that every guy's dad is going to go watch. Yeah. And then Man Up is a show about, like, our generation of wimpy men being around each other.
And then NCIS, 90210 Ugly, and Biggest Loser.
So, I don't think this show's long for the world.
Nope.
I'll give it half.
I'll give it 5.
I'll give it full season run. Sleeper hit. Man Up.
Highlight that as Ash's sleeper.
I did.
You had me at Call of Duty.
Okay.
Pomegranate body wash.
We're halfway through our list. Do you want to save the other half for...
We can.
Because we're at about an hour and a half, and I think that's right in the pocket. So we can pick this up, like...
Yeah, to the next one.
On 27. Because I do want to spend time talking about some of the shows on Fox, especially...
Sure.
Terra Nova, Alcatraz, and...
X-Factor.
And X-Factor.
Yes!
Woo! So, all right, well then we'll stop it here. We'll pick up the next half of the list next week. This is fun, though. It's fun reading all the ridiculous descriptions of these stupid shows.
I like this. I'm glad we're doing this, because I feel like we can revisit these shows again in the future, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well, I would have never read about half of them.
Yeah, and we don't do a lot of TV talk on this thing, and I think, like, as far as Nerd Appropriate goes, television is a little underrepresented.
I agree.
For us, so I think it's cool.
And the bad thing is, E3 is next week, and there's going to be so much news.
Well, but we just do news and this.
Ungodly amounts.
So next week we'll talk
E3. Well, there's a review to do, though, too, depending on when we do the podcast.
Oh, really?
X-Men.
Oh, okay.
We know it's going to be good. It's good! Yes, done. Fucking great.
Well, I mean, we can...
We'll figure it out. We'll revisit this next week. We'll finish this
We have plenty of time. We have the whole summer to hit this list back up.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't come to fall, so...
So, all right. Well, that's episode 26, then.
Excellent. So, keep an eye out for videos from Spooky Empire's Mayhem. And then,
E3 coverage. I think
and
we're all going to be...
Showbot Monday.
Sitting around and live tweeting.
Well, no one's going to know that.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Until after.
Because this will be posted after.
Just delete that.
Yeah.
So, sweet. Pros.
Cool. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
We're out. Play the music.